Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's live webinar, Data Security and Beyond, a Cost-Effective Approach to Online Fraud Protection for Retailers, hosted by Retail Online Integration Magazine and sponsored by Bit9. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. With the incidence of online fraud growing in the U.S., understanding how to protect you and your online customers' data should be top of mind. Unfortunately, for many retailers, data security can be a confusing maze of acronyms, standards, and rules that end up at the bottom of a loaded to-do list. To make sense of data security and to understand the importance of it, thank you so much for listening in today to Dave Montague of the Fraud Practice and author of Fraud Prevention Techniques for Credit Card Fraud, and Chris Trand, the Senior Solutions Consultant and Compliance Specialist of Bit9, who will discuss the following: how to prevent credit card fraud in the card-not-present space, best practices around data security and online fraud protection, what the PCI data standard securities are, and best practices around PCI compliance. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console, marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Also, please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Well, here to discuss online fraud and fraud protection, let me introduce you to Dave Montague.
Good afternoon and welcome, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to come and attend the webinar. To get us started, I'd like to talk a little bit about e-commerce and kind of what's happening in the industry. When we talk about the CMP channel, obviously it's continuing to grow at a very fast pace. Meanwhile, fraud and fraud attempts have been absolutely keeping pace with that growth in that particular channel. In today's marketplace, merchants are spending anywhere from basically 10 basis points to 3% of their transaction revenue on fraud prevention. Obviously, there's quite a wide spread there in terms of how much is actually being spent to prevent fraud in that online channel. And everybody basically agrees that the online channels will continue to grow. And obviously, as they continue to grow, you should expect that fraud trends and pace will obviously stay aligned with that. You'll still continue to see a rise in fraud. Now, for the U.S. marketplace, you should be aware that with the initiatives for chip and PIN coming into the U.S. marketplace, you will probably see a rise in fraud attempts as well as fraud losses occurring in your online channel as well as your telephone call center if you have that channel as well. We saw this rise in the European Union in terms of the U.K. and France and other markets there as well as in Australia and Canada. When they actually implemented their chip and PIN programs. And unlike the European marketplace, right now there's currently nothing out there basically saying that they're going to mandate the programs like Verified by Visa in the U.S. marketplace, which obviously was something that did happen in the EU. So I would actually expect that we'll even see a larger increase in fraud attempts in this particular market. Now, when it comes to fraud prevention, one of the biggest problems that we see when I talk to most retailers is they really still focus or have this concept of fraud as being, I need to be able to stop some guy from basically using a stolen credit card at my website. And from a fraud perspective, you're actually at risk in a lot of different areas. You obviously are going to be at risk anytime you're accepting payments coming in. You're at risk when money is going out in terms of outbound cash flow, but you're also at risk in terms of the fraudsters coming in and taking over, doing damage to your existing customer accounts. And when we talk about that guy who's coming in and using the stolen credit card, that's what we term third-party fraud. And that's only one component piece. First-party fraud is where we have consumers that are actually the ones that are making purchases, but they may say, you know, I didn't get it, it didn't arrive, but it did. It's not my order. All those fun things, but we know that they actually did go do them. And then you also have potential fraud in terms of affiliate fraud, in terms of that inbound route, and in terms of outbound fraud. You can see fraud basically occurring in terms of your affiliate channels as well as bank account takeovers, especially if you're transferring or moving money. And likewise, when we talk about our customer accounts, most organizations are very familiar with account takeover and that risk, but a lot of organizations don't really do a whole lot to protect that side of the house. It's kind of the, we'll get to it if we have time. Now, from my perspective, I look at and I hear fraud, I hear compliance, I hear security, and they kind of get used, intertwined in terms of conversations. They are different. They complement, they cross over, but as a retailer, you need to make sure that you are focusing some attention on all three of these different disciplines. Because the reality is being good at fraud prevention does not imply that you have good security. So you could be really good at preventing fraud, but still be open to data breach, internal fraud, or an account takeover. Likewise, being secure does not imply that you're good at preventing fraud, or that you're not going to experience fraud. You're still going to be at risk in terms of first-party fraud and third-party fraud. So you have to make sure that you are devoting enough attention to all these different disciplines to make sure that you're making a complete and secure environment and you're minimizing your potential for loss. So when it comes to focusing your attention and kind of where you can expect to have the biggest impact, when we talk about fraud prevention efforts provide the maximum input and value in terms of stopping inbound fraud. They provide some help for outbound fraud prevention, but they really don't provide a lot of value when we talk about preventing data breaches or account takeovers. For protecting yourself in the customer account side, it's really about ensuring that you have good security measures in place. And, security and security programs will provide the maximum input for those customer accounts, and they provide good value in the outbound prevention side, but they provide very little in terms of basically preventing inbound payment fraud when somebody comes to your site and is making a first-time purchase. Now, in terms of compliance is something, obviously, that you have to do, and it does provide, you can make the argument it does provide some value in terms of direct fraud loss, but in reality, it really doesn't do a whole lot for you in terms of what are you going to basically prevent in terms of loss today. It's really that security effort along with that fraud prevention program and making sure that those two sides basically have enough coverage to protect yourself as an organization. Now, if you've heard me speak before, this isn't going to be news to you, but the fact is when we talk about the tools that the credit card associations provide to you, things like AVS, the CVV, the 3D secure programs, these particular programs do not constitute a real fraud solution. They're really tools that they've tried to provide to you to help. You should never expect that if I do AVS card security code and 3D secure, that is absolutely going to keep me out of trouble. Only if the fraudsters really aren't focusing on you would that actually be the case. And the fact is all of these different efforts have been compromised by fraudsters in the past. And likewise, from experience and actually doing data analysis from the card association level all the way down, we have found that these indicators are typically bad indicators in terms of fraudulent activity, such as AVS. The fact is it's much more likely that a fraudster is going to have an ABS equal full match than a good consumer will. So it's not a good indication of fraudulent activity. Additionally, when we talk about these different tools that the card associations provide to you, they lack consistency from program to program. So, in other words, Discover is going to be different from MasterCard, MasterCard is going to be different from Visa, and likewise, they lack consistency from region to region. So the tools we have in the U.S. market for Visa are going to be different from the tools that we're going to have in the European market, which are different from the tools that you have in the Asian market. So you really have to make sure you understand what it is they really do and don't provide based on a particular region. So, you know, the net-net is, you know, you need to basically take the approach that these tools that I get from the card associations are going to be tools, and I need to basically incorporate them into some broader type of fraud solution program. Now, when you talk about the marketplace out there today, you'll find that there are a lot of vendor choices that you have in terms of, what types of organizations are basically providing you different capabilities for fraud prevention. When I first started just before 2000 and really focusing on what's going on in the market, there was only four vendors really in that space. Today there's over 200 that we track providing fraud services. And there are a lot of different techniques for fraud prevention. Now you don't need to employ all 40 of these techniques. The concept is finding which techniques really work best for your particular marketplace and your channels. So how do you really make sense of it all? The first thing is, you need to basically understand that there is no one-size-fits-all, and there's not a silver bullet solution in terms of what you can get in the marketplace. And, they're not always going to work the same for every vertical market. That being said, in terms of, efficient things that you can do to kind of, minimize cost for the retail space, for online, there are some standards that you should be basically implementing in terms of tools and techniques. You need to have the ability to write and manage rules. You need to have the ability to manage lists, like blacklists and gray lists. You need to be able to perform velocities, such as velocity of use and velocity of change within your organization. And you should be making use of geolocation and proxy data in terms of your online transactions. These are very inexpensive and easy things to basically implement. And they actually go a long way towards preventing fraud. So with that, what I'll do is go ahead and I'll turn it over to Chris, who'll talk a little bit about the security side.
Great. Thanks, David. So my name is Chris Strand. So I manage the retail compliance practice at Bit9, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to you today. And I'm going to focus on an angle that I believe is of importance within this spectrum for online retailers. And the scope is of the base security systems that many of the online retailers have in place and the effectiveness of those systems to ensure customer data is not vulnerable and also measurably secure when weighing both security and compliance practices and policies across the enterprise. And I'm kind of keying off the idea that David was just talking to you about earlier, around the idea of looking at the full picture of where you're at risk. And for my purposes, specifically honing in on your data risk with regards to the, in particular, data breach and critical data, guarding critical data, and also weighing in on the efforts around protecting your data by either gaining, when you're considering gaining PCI compliance or building and implementing those security policies. So the idea here is for online retailers to possibly consider a new paradigm or way of thinking about security of that data. And this paradigm will help in two different perspectives. First, if it's to maintain their PCI compliance stance, which with both online and telephone, CND retail transactions are definitely affected by, and they're responsible for it, so it's a necessity. But PCI maintains that it's in its guidance for telephone CNT retailers and online retailers that all these service providers provide, all these retailers provide appropriate measures to protect any systems that store, process, or transmit the cardholder data, the data or this critical data. Secondly, though, it's to simplify and add another level of security to the infrastructure in effort to gain that as close as we can get to 100% control and also visibility and protection of that data across the transactional enterprise. Of course, the solution considers it needs to try to avoid the burdens and the overhead that usually comes along with the current online retail security compliance solutions and practices once they put in place, because this is something we want to lessen, obviously, when we consider the guarding that data. So the viable alternative that I'm going to refer to is for retailers is a security approach based on trust, or a positive, proactive solution, where the security paradigm is one in which security controls focus on what specific trusted modules can function within the system and which ones can't. So I want to introduce you to the concepts of this trust-based positive security solution and hopefully provide an effective way to deal with the advanced threats posed to online retailers or posed to their critical data that they're dealing with and they're in charge of and have the responsibility of protecting. So this proactive security solution is built around four core components here. So the first component is trust. So in the current online retail environment, there's a need to be in a proactive security posture. And really the only way to do this is to really understand what trust means within that environment and what the reputation is of all the processes running across the enterprise. Regardless of where they reside, be it order-taking terminals or the back office servers or that web front end or an online retailer, all the possible points in the typical e-tailer or online retailer transaction. There are really two ways to define that trust, both through the company-identified trust or the enterprise-identified trust or the process-driven trust or and the cloud-driven trust. Those are two ways that we could identify that particular trust. So the solution will also be able to quickly detect high-risk processes within the system. So with the advanced threats faced by retailers to their critical data, to the data that they're responsible for, understanding the trust level of all their endpoints inside their systems is a first step in allowing them to enforce security or enforce a security base built around what I really like to call the golden business process. So it's basically that's a list or process that needs to function in order for the retailer to do this online retailer to conduct business. Again, an example of this would be the system processes, front or back end, used by maybe an order taker, telephone order taker in a CNP transaction that need to be there and functioning in order for the e-tailer to take an order, essentially. So the next thing the solution provides then is full visibility and detections in real time of everything that's arriving and attempting to run within the enterprise. So, for example, when we're protecting a data system, it's imperative that retailers know everything about the software that's being executed and how it arrives on all the endpoints while having a complete audit trail of everything that's happened across that enterprise, which of course becomes even more useful when it's time for the pre- or post-PCI audit analysis. So the positive proactive system will also have the ability to protect and ensure the security of all the retail assets, because we're focusing on compliance, but we want to make sure that we're protecting this critical data and that's secure. So the system will need to employ a policy enforcement that will provide trusted process controls, essentially, to enforce a user or context-based configurable policies in a dynamic way, and again throughout the entire environment. So in the event of an emergency or a compelling event, retailers would have the ability then to lock down their enterprise through a policy, essentially freezing time and allowing for forensics and analysis and also post-assessment reviews. So lastly, a positive solution will give online retailers the ability to consistently and continuously create real-time actionable intelligence on all the retail endpoints, enabling the application of measure, essentially. So they're going to be able to measure the endpoints so that the retail organization can immediately be able to collect threat and trust metrics associated with any new existing process running within the system. It'll both provide the automated pre- and post-audit reporting in order to meet those PCI compliance needs, of course, but also alert the retail organization if any unexpected activity or event or one that poses unwarranted threat to the organization, essentially. So all the while, this proactive positive solution will give the online retailers the ability to then analyze the data and get a really clear picture of the security posture of the enterprise. So looking at both perspectives. So I want to look a little bit here at the state of online retail practices and what those systems look like and the systems that are protecting the data, essentially. So more often than none, many of these online retail systems that represent the typical established online retail enterprise architecture, several I've personally worked with in the past and seen firsthand, they're compromised of older technology in some cases. Especially in the case of order-taking terminals where there's multiple terminals or there's operations where there's lots of people working, they stretch the dollar and those tend to be older systems. Or perhaps with online stuff, they can be comprised around open source or cheaper alternatives, again, to stretch the budget with the online mid-sized retailers. Many times the bandwidth is stretched and maxing on capacity, so these systems are frequently pushed well beyond the established capacity. Usually due to the type of security protection that they're employing or they choose to employ. And they're often based on negative models consisting with needed updates and stuff. The security-related procedures as well are then also based on a negative type of model. So within these retail systems, there's often a huge administrative burden, usually due to the growing need to maintain control over all of these assets, the patch levels they have to do, the system changes. So online retailers not only need to ensure control over these systems, but they also need to ensure that they can track them in real time, build business and active intelligence around them, and finally ensure that they have adequate reporting on them with the proper data included, again, to mitigate or lessen the audit burden that they're going to have associated with PCI compliance as well as security. So a couple of things that affect or that affect the need for a positive paradigm or a positive security practice within retail systems. So first of all is the increased data amounts compounded by technology growth, essentially. The increased data amounts, as data relevance grows, as the data that they're in charge of protecting, maybe they're employing a new process where they're taking on new types of credit cards or new types of credit card data, or that they require to work with their required business process, will then force them to include that in their process and also protect that in their process. So as that data relevance grows, so does the administrative burden then grow on top of that. So also with the change in technology as well, it increases the liability on the merchant. So there are often, so we're talking about chip and PIN implementations in other countries earlier, and with that technology, there's a great degree of data at risk under chip and PIN that actually PCI has forced new types of liability on the online retailers in question that they have to, so if there is a data breach and they weren't using the required security mechanisms under chip and PIN, then the liability is passed down to the merchant to a greater degree than it used to be. So, again, this creates an entirely new type of administrative burden that they wouldn't have had to deal with when they formulated the business and whatnot. Business operational requirements is another piece that tends to increase increase the size of the threat window under the negative model. So, for example, production and holiday freezes are examples in the retail industry where under the negative model, it increases that threat window. So under a positive model, we would no longer need to worry to the same degree for patches and updates and system refreshes and whatnot because we've gained control of the system and we're locking it down from a positive degree as opposed to dealing with situations where we're going to have known production freezes where we need to give every ounce of power to the system, such as something like Black Friday, where online retailers as well as brick-and-mortar retailers face the same situation because of that standard business operational requirement. They have to freeze those systems so that they're ready to go and that, you know, everyone's going to be able to conduct the transactions. So under those systems, under the negative model, they're creating a huge threat window because they can't patch those systems and keep them up to date. Training end-user education is another thing that comes into play as well. So there's a lack of efficient methods under the negative model to spread end-user security awareness, meaning if we don't have a method in place of collecting and finding out if the security policies that we're pushing out are actually being put into practice, and as well to be able to report that those have been consumed to ensure that we're compliant, then it increases the problem all the more under the negative model. So from there, I'm going to pass this over to Melissa and carry out with any questions that go from here.
Excellent, great. Well, thank you guys so much for your great introductions. Part of this presentation is going to be around sort of a Q&A with both speakers. So before we get to your questions, and they are starting to come in, so thank you for that. I thought I'd we had some questions that we vetted beforehand. So we're going to start there and sort of get their perspectives and then move into the questions from the audience. So this first one is I'm going to shoot it to Dave. And it's kind of about geolocation. I think you mentioned it briefly, but can you tell the listeners how much value geolocation offers in fraud prevention today? And maybe just explain a little bit about what it is.
Sure. So, you know, geolocation data has obviously been around for quite a while and has been used as a tool for quite a while in fraud prevention. And geolocation data, essentially, when somebody comes to your site online, will let you know what country, you know, what state, what city, you know, a particular consumer is coming from. And obviously geolocation data, you know, is used for marketing purposes. It's used for localization. But when it comes to the fraud channel itself, it's also a great tool to use to determine if, it really is the consumer that you're dealing with. So, excuse me, if they gave you a billing address that basically said that they're from California, and we actually see that they're using an IP address that indicates that they're coming from New York, we may want to question that transaction. Or it could be very obvious where it's, you know, they say that they're from California and they're using an IP address that's actually coming from Nigeria or Ghana. Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, you would seriously question that particular transaction. Now, you know, it's geolocation is still absolutely effective. It's absolutely useful, and it's very inexpensive to use. The only thing that I'll caveat that with is, you know, you need to kind of go beyond just the simple, you know, what's the country, what's the region. You want to use data providers that are going to provide you some additional information to actually let you know about the quality of an IP address. It's actually very easy to fake an IP address. And to hide it using what we call as a proxy. And not all proxies are bad, but the fact is it's very easy to hide it. And you want to have, you know, the ability to actually look at it and say, you know, hey, is this a good IP? And does it basically, do I believe that it's really coming from this particular region? So, you know, absolutely useful, very inexpensive, and definitely what I would consider a standard tool for e-commerce today.
Is it something that's is it a relatively new practice in the fraud arena, or is it something that's gotten more popular because of the, you know, as you were talking about, the international growth of fraud? I mean, it seems like it's something
it's been around. You know, this is, you know, goes back into the 90s. You know, it's been around for quite a long time. You know, the you know, what's new is, you know, again, has to do with how you use it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that whole quality indication and the ability to detect proxies and be able to label that's really more the new capability, new quality control kind of concept that we're getting out of it, and that provides additional value in terms of fraud prevention.
Okay, great. Let me go to the next question. Let's see here. Let's see. Okay. This is something that, you know, I'm also going to ask David, but, of course, Chris, you can chime in if you'd like. But won't the new PCI requirements for call centers help prevent some fraud? And maybe you could just kind of briefly explain what they are, either you or David. I'm sorry, either you, Dave, or Chris. Yeah, what the call requirements are for call centers.
Chris, you want to start that or?
No, I think it would help if you relate it to you know, around the differences between identifying fraud and security versus compliance. That would help, and I can add to that.
All right. So I mean, first of all, the new PCI requirements around call centers are really talking about, you know, the new controls that you have to put in place that basically say when somebody comes in and they're giving you a credit card number, it needs to kind of, you know, be separated. So it's almost like going to an auto attendant kind of a concept.
Mm-hmm.
So that the call, the rep doesn't actually hear the card number, right? Is the idea. So they're trying to create more separation. Unfortunately, there's a lot of activity like card skimming and stuff like that happens in call centers. You know, people writing down card numbers that are coming in. You even have people doing supervisors that are doing reviews in the call center, and they're actually seeing credit card numbers, in the raw. And these things just are not good security practices. And from a fraud perspective, it absolutely is a place where fraud can occur, and you know, because of the fact that those cards are coming in, and we absolutely do see that. So, in terms of being able to provide a direct impact into potential stopping potential fraud loss, this is one of the requirements that absolutely should provide some level of protection for retailers that are implementing it, if they're actually have a call center and they're actually doing this,
mm-hmm.
obviously as another channel.
Yep.
Okay, anything you want to add to that, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, really, from the PCI perspective, the risks to under PCI for are measured more on the risk to the data as opposed to fraud. And that's the real separation here that happens when you're talking about fraud and security versus compliance. From the PCI standpoint, it's more, the regulatory body is basically saying, well, hey, you got to protect that credit card data and from being potentially exposed to unnecessary risk. And how they measure unnecessary risk is really not a consideration for fraud on that data, more of a consideration of how you guard it against a security risk. And so what David explained is entirely true, because the perspective is, if you're recording credit card data, if you're doing a telephone or a card-not-present transaction and you're recording that data is considered the same as if you recorded that credit card number, took it offline, or you took a scan of that, or somebody ran number and such. So there's no real differentiation made there from the PCI standpoint. It's essentially you have to guard that data to have systems in place then that will protect that data from a security breach or a baseline type of a breach. So, but that's a different thing than fraud. So it's important to consider both aspects, I believe, when you're talking about the new PCI requirements.
Okay, great. Excellent. That's a good distinction, too. For the listeners. Let's see, the next question I'm going to ask, I'm going to direct it to Dave again. If a company does not have a fraud problem today, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners, they may not have a fraud problem, how does it justify spending money on improving fraud prevention while you have such high requirements for PCI compliance?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's something that I get asked quite a bit. And the reality is most organizations don't really think about fraud until they actually have what we call the significant emotional event where a lot of money basically is lost. Unfortunately, I've gone into situations where you're talking about very large amounts of money basically going out of the company in a very short time frame as the fraudsters hit. PCI is definitely something that you have to do. It's a requirement, and it provides, obviously, a much longer tail in terms of fraud prevention in terms of everybody in the community kind of a concept. But, you know, in terms of protecting yourself, you need to make sure that you're investing some money, almost like an insurance policy, to make sure that you don't become essentially a victim to fraud. The fact is, fraudsters move around from site to site. They may not be there at this point. It might be more casual fraud versus the organized fraud rings. But when an organized fraud ring basically hits a site, you know, they typically will settle in, and it usually takes about 8 months before they really start really taking big chunks of money from a merchant. You know, they really do go through a full testing program to see how you react, test your different channels, what kind of tools you have. They completely reverse engineer what you're doing, and then they start basically their process of monetizing. So it's definitely something that once fraud actually starts happening, you know, it's obviously going to take a little time to get something implemented and put in place. So it can be quite painful once you get into that process. Anything you want to add to that, Chris? Or
That's pretty good.
Okay.
I can bring up the lead down to that is around, you know, the baseline data and the systems put in process to actually protect that. But the underlying systems themselves kind of identify themselves with both fraud and the PCI compliance requirements. So it is a balancing act, and I agree that the compelling event is sometimes the piece that will drive the justification of the money spent.
Great. Okay, the next question is going to be directed to Chris. So can you explain how a positive security can align itself into the business process, enabling retail systems, such as call centers and e-tailers, to be more secure and efficient?
That's a good question. So really, the way in which a positive security solution can align itself in the retail systems or online retail system really lies in its ability to establish that set of trusted processes. And this is the real differentiator here, where the retail enterprise has a defined set of approvals, and approvals is the key word there. Now, and I alluded to this earlier when I talked about that golden business process. Mm-hmm. So this is what the trusted-based policy is developed around. Essentially, the online retailer then has the ability to automate the approval of these trusted processes. So it doesn't affect that business process or that golden business process to a degree, and it doesn't add undue additional administrative burden. But at the same time, they're able to then analyze those processes for unexpected change now because it's been set into a trusted business process or is mapped into a trusted business process. So it's able to easily identify then that an unexpected change or change outside of what we call the known good. So once that trust base is established, there's no need then to remap or, you know, often we say rescan the environment as opposed to the negative model, right, in which you have to constantly scan the environment. And it's not aligned into the business process at all. It's just basically, okay, here's the things I don't want to happen. I'm going to continually scan to see if one of these things appear. So under that trust-based system, it's fully aligned and mapped into the business process. So you'll always know and be able to see if anything new has arrived or has the potential to cause harm to the existing business process.
Great. See a couple more questions, and then we'll get into the live chat. Chris, why is it important to have real-time risk information, such as threat and trust, on hand when considering the security and compliance stance of the enterprise? You could talk a little bit about what time risk information is, you know, real-time risk.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So the real-time ability is imperative because so having that real-time threat and trust, and what I mean by that is an inventory of your enterprise, essentially. So you understand the risk level associated with everything that's running in your enterprise. So having that in real time, that threat and trust across the enterprise is crucial to determine or measure the risk to all your systems at any point in the process. So for compliance, the threat and trust information will really allow the retailer to apply risk analysis to any known or potential vulnerabilities that have been identified. It'll actually help tremendously in meeting several PCI requirements that are kind of new to the scene. I mean, it was recently in June 30th, 2012. Again, you know, the PCI piece is required, and they have to do this. But essentially, you know, I'll just pick one out from something that has changed recently where this really applies to under PCI requirement 6.2. Normally, you know, you would have to run or verify the process or identify new security vulnerabilities. If you have real-time threat and trust data available to you across from all the processes across your enterprise, the new change to 6.2 is now that you actually have to rank these or run risk analysis against these vulnerabilities or these new possible vulnerabilities and security threats, security vulnerabilities in your system. So this is going to help tremendously under the positive-based system because, again, the positive-based system has the business process mapped into it and has that ability to have threat and trust information or basically the reputation of this particular software. So you know what the reputation should be of that software running because you've established those approvals of what can run. So then you have the threat and trust information. So now you can very quickly run a risk assessment of the vulnerabilities or any new or potential vulnerabilities that are sitting in your system, either identified by PCI or identified from standard security vulnerabilities databases and such things. So it will help tremendously in that direction. From a security standpoint, it definitely helps from in terms of gaining business intelligence or threat intelligence around your enterprise from a security standpoint, i.e. threat running forensics or perhaps even correlating data together from compelling events that that have happened within the scope of the enterprise that have been even maybe identified by other systems that are out there that can take advantage of the positive model because, again, once we have the real-time threat and trust data that we can combine together with a compelling event that happens, an unauthorized transaction perhaps or something like that that's appeared in the system that's outside of that known good or is suspicious, we can very, very quickly filter out the noise and hone in and down on this particular vulnerability or compelling event and understand exactly what risk it imposes on our organization in both terms of compliance, risk to compliance, and also from a security risk.
Okay, great. Well, we have one more question, and then we're going to go to the live questions. So let's see. What are some inherent benefits, Chris, to ensuring that a retail organization is both PCI compliant and fully secure at the same time?
Sure. That's a twofold question. So really, the inherent benefits essentially feed off one another. Mm-hmm. When you weigh ensuring ironclad security with gaining and maintaining PCI compliance. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot to talk to around this, and definitely when you consider all three, when you consider fraud and security and PCI compliance, as Dave was discussing earlier. So from these two perspectives, from security and compliance perspectives, first, because being compliant, even though you may not have guaranteed the security of your systems by being compliant, as we know is a truth, what you've done by being compliant is you've demonstrated that you've followed and gone through a very finely defined process of checks and balances that has the benefit of now giving you the ability and enables you to measure your system and measure the risks associated or posed on your system. So you've identified each of the critical areas of the business process, right, within the enterprise that contain sensitive processes, transactions, and data as well. And by enabling your business to have that type of information, essentially a compliant state, so when you're in that compliant state from a PCI perspective, you've taken that first step in implementing an approach of positive-based security, like I've been speaking about. Since now you know the specific areas within the business process that need to be protected, and you can easily identify those areas now because you've gone through that checklist. I mean, PCI essentially is that checklist of checks and balances. So now by implementing the trust-based solution focused on security, you can now focus on the process, the processes and transactions that you need to be approved in order for your business to function, essentially, and you know what those are. While at the same time, you've also narrowed the threat window, since only those approved processes now that you've used PCI to identify and those transactions that PCI has identified, those are the only ones that you'll allow to exist in your system. So also now that you have the ability to measure and audit a secure system, so once you're secure and the benefits behind that, from a positive-based approach, for example, you know exactly what processes are allowed to change, and you can now easily tell if the security policy you've put in place is being consumed by those who need to embrace it as well, right? So you can, by being secure, you're actually enabling and enhancing the security enhancements, because you know that now with this increased amount of security measure that you have in your system, especially under a positive-based, trust-based system, you know which of the security enhancements in your retail processes are actually having an effect on the system, because you can see exactly who's embracing these, who's maybe read the security policy, who's enforcing the security policy, and if those processes or those new processes that have been put into the approval mechanism are actually happening, because you can actually see it in real time and you can measure it, and you know that these are the ones that are supposed to be, these are the processes that are supposed to be happening.
Okay, great. I think that covers it. That covers that question. So now I'm going to go to the last portion of our webinar here, and that is to have you guys answer some questions that have already come through. But I just want to let everyone know that, you know, we're here and we're ready to take any questions that you have. So please send them. We have another 10 minutes or so. So let's see. The first question I was going to ask, I believe this one came through when you were talking, Chris, and I'm just going to read it to you and see if you could help out here. The listener doesn't have their own servers, but they go through a platform that provides their site and shopping, that provides them with their site and shopping cart. Would that be a vendor that they would talk to about making sure they're completely secure when it comes to customers' data? And you know, Dave, I'm sure you can chime in on this one too, but, you know, what do you guys, how do you guys feel about that? Is that the way to go, or?
Well, absolutely. I mean, a provider has a list of requirements on their own that they have to adhere to. And, I mean, the first step in that would be to, you know, just inquire. I mean, if I'm choosing a technology, and I was talking about this earlier in terms of the business requirements, mm-hmm. And some of the business processes, operational requirements, et cetera, that affect the security stance and the compliance stance for online retailers is – that, you know, the first step would be to inquire what types of security policies are put in place, what types of security mechanisms they're using on the back end. Are they PCI compliant? Have they done, normally of that size, what depending on what tier they are, have they actually done and gone through the process of a report on compliance, or have they answered a self-questionnaire? Do they do their scans, all that sort of thing? You know, and that's as easy as essentially even going through the security assessor's questionnaire, very simply for online retailers, you can pick it up online and then essentially go in and there's a number of questions that are asked through there for your standard online retailer, which, you know, if I was going out there as a retailer and using a provider, I would go through those particular questions and ask those of the retailer to ensure that both security and compliance mechanisms are put in place as a foundation.
David, did you want to answer that too? I mean, are there any questions that you should ask either the host of your website or whatever company you're using to make sure data is secure? I mean, are there any other questions?
No, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, if you're using a third-party vendor, and obviously a lot of folks are, you know, that's okay, but, you know, you definitely need to do, you know, your homework and due diligence in terms of, you know, are they PCI compliant? You know, are they, you know, are you using them for tokenization and other parts of the, you know, to kind of get, you know, kind of avoid doing some of those things in PCI? which is fine, but you do absolutely need to make sure that you are going in and kind of, you know, you should be able to ask them. They'll tell you if they're PCI compliant and to what standard, and then you can start to go through and, you know, talk to them about, you know, what kind of things that they provide and don't provide in terms of the data protection and security. And obviously, you know, that includes basically the data that's stored as well as data that is in transit. You got to look at both pieces of that to make sure that you really are getting a complete picture in terms of the security side of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that's about the gist of it. You know, it's like, you know, it's just a matter of getting with them and asking the questions.
Great. Okay. Another. This might be for you, David. Are there any business standards or numbers for fraud prevention, like the percentage of order cancellations, percentage of chargebacks from credit card companies? You know, and you know, maybe if you can't go through it now, maybe you could tell the listener where this can be found for a merchant.
Yeah. So in terms of benchmarks, you know, there is no universal benchmark that's really out there, and you have to be very cautious with these benchmarks because it really varies from merchant to merchant. So one merchant might be more inclined to take some fraud in order to maximize their sales conversion because they have high margins and they can eat a little bit more. Whereas, you know, if you're basically selling things with lower margins, you're going to be more adverse to risk. So you might actually, you know, be okay with a little bit of insult population or good customers that are insulted by your fraud program. So there aren't really good benchmarks that are out there. I mean, some of the surveys that you can, you know, kind of look at to kind of see, you know, how you compare to others that are out there. You know, CyberSource does a annual merchant survey each year, and that actually does have some good benchmarks in terms of, you know, the different merchants basically, you know, through self-polling are basically saying, you know, this is what our numbers are, this is what we kind of do and what we don't do. And that's going to be about the closest you're going to get in terms of the industry saying, here's a number.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something that most people want to talk about. So,
right, that's the problem. does Bit9 do any surveys or anything?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a number of retail-specific surveys that Bit9 has done in terms of the control that retailers have had over their systems, essentially. And that doesn't give you the full picture of, you know, the perspective of fraud across those systems, but it does kind of lend a hand in extrapolating out the results of how, you know, how much control there is over the security systems and how many compelling events are taking place. And now probably a large number of those are fraud events. In the scope of some way or another, some type of fraud, whether it be data breach or whether it be third party or whatever it is. But there are a number of retail surveys that Bit9 has done that will provide that type of information to at least give us a clue into that type of data.
Okay. And I guess if they wanted to get that information, they could contact you.
They absolutely could, or they could go to bit9.com, and it's very easy to find off of the main page.
Okay. Let's see. What about another one of our listeners? What should the listener do about online international orders that they suspect are fraudulent? that's sort of the holy grail question.
Well, you know, I mean, it's The best thing you're going to do, you know, obviously there are different things that you can do for international orders. You know, so I can't just say, you know, hey, go do this. I wish
right.
I could, but
right.
It really depends on where you're talking about and what you want to go do. But, you know, the things you can do and use, you know, in terms of geolocation and stuff like that, those things are there. Unfortunately, for the international market, trying to do things like what we call identity authentication, where we actually try to see, like, you know, does this name, phone, address, does all this stuff kind of go together? You know, in the U.S. market, it's very inexpensive, and there's lots of providers that do that. as you get international, that's not really the case. It's much more expensive, probably, you know, five times what it costs in the U.S. market for the equivalent type of a check. For most organizations, they obviously use, you know, a lot of technology-based techniques to basically detect repeat fraud, in terms of those channels. You're not going to really have a lot of inexpensive ways to really go out there and vet folks, because it's just not the same kind of information.
Did you want to add anything, Chris, or?
The determination of that transaction in terms of whether it's international order or is suspected as fraud or not, I mean, it's at the system level, it's really, I mean, if it's an authorized transaction, it's an authorized transaction. So, that would relate definitely more to the aspect of determining fraud and investigating fraud rather than actually guarding the system. Because, I mean, if the system's under a positive-based approach, if it's a valid order with the right credentials, then it has the right credentials. Then it's more of a analyzing where it's coming from and everything else, and then those types of third-party applications that could provide that type of information. But the positive-based approach could help the underlying data. So I mean, if the transaction happens and arrives, but the data within the transaction is outside of that known good, well, then it could help in that aspect. But that's more protecting the data as opposed to allowing a transaction to happen that's coming out of the scope that would be considered fraud or measured fraud from that perspective, from the transaction level.
Okay.
Again, focus on the different techniques that look for repeat fraud, like data sharing and device ID. There's a bunch of different things that are out there that can impact it, you know, help in the international side. There are some things you can do with the phone as well. The other thing to consider, too, you know, based on your region, like, you know, the EU, verified by Visa is mandated throughout the entire EU. And as a general retailer, you would be protected against fraud. So, you know, that might be an area where for the EU you want to implement, you know, the things like verified by Visa, so that you actually get that fraud protection and you don't have to really spend a lot of time basically determining whether an order is suspect or not.
Okay. We only have time for, these last two questions. So let's see. On an industry-wide basis, and this could be for either one of you guys, how much of your operating budgets are affected by online fraud, or of operating budgets in general affected? And is it increased over standard factors or more prevalent in, like, sales and service losses or?
I can make one small comment about that. And from what we've seen, and also a recent retail survey that Bit9 has done around the operation budgets that are inversely affected by online fraud, in terms of the amount of increased pressure it puts on guarding the systems that are responsible for the transactions, we've seen an increase in the operating budgets that are affected there, both by the administrative burden, by the transactional data scope growth, and then also the reaction of PCI in general, in that they'll tighten specific types of requirements and such, and require more from a compliance standpoint. Many vendors having to do more. And we've seen that in a recent survey that we did see this come back from some existing and other retail clients that we did the retail survey across, in that the cost affected with guarding their systems and securing their systems has grown exponentially because of online fraud. At the end of the day, it's because of online fraud that's actually having a direct relation to those budgets, and then administrative growth and the works that come right along with that. So we've definitely seen a a great increase. Now, how much that is hard to determine in terms of a percentage, but it has definitely been an increase.
Yeah, I would agree that we definitely have seen an increase in fraud, in terms of the amount of money that's being spent in the marketplace.
Okay, great. Well, you know what? We're actually out of time. So I just wanted to, first of all, on behalf of Bit9 and Retail Online Integration, I want to thank everybody on the line for attending today's webinar, and also be sure to check out our webinar page to get more information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you would please take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, we would be very helpful, very happy about that. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring you in the future. And also thank you very much to Chris and Dave for some great information that I'm sure will help you guys out during the upcoming holiday seasons and in 2013. So I hope to see you all at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Thanks a lot, everybody. Bye-bye.